Hello and welcome to Iris for Sunday, May 5th, 2024, and Saturday, May 4th, 2024. I hope you all have had a wonderful week. Let's see what the Sioux City Journal has in store for us. Let's take a look at the 5-day forecast to see what we can expect weather-wise. Today there will be times of clouds and sun with winds from the south-southeast at 7 to 14 miles per hour and a high of 69 degrees. Tonight it will be turning cloudy with winds from the southeast 7 to 14 miles per hour and a low of 51 degrees. Tomorrow, Monday, strong afternoon thunderstorms, winds from the south-southeast 12 to 25 miles per hour, high of 71, low of 47. Tuesday, mostly sunny and beautiful, winds west-northwest 6 to 12 miles per hour, high of 75, low of 44. Wednesday, partly sunny and pleasant, winds from the northwest 3 to 6 miles per hour, high of 67, low of 47. Thursday, cooler with a few showers, winds north 8 to 16 miles per hour, high of 61, low of 44. All right, let's now look at the front page and see what we got. This article, the main page, is about the Sioux City Farmers Market. Headline, Market Season is Here. Subheadline, Sioux City Farmers Market opens season to enthusiastic crowds. A business born out of the pandemic celebrated a sellout at its first Saturday at the Sioux City Farmers Market. The market opened for the 2024 season Saturday morning. Quote, in the middle of the pandemic, I wanted to learn how to make sourdough, and that's what got me started. I started making it for my family and wanted to try it, says Annabelle Misa of Sioux City. Quote, then this last year in July, we sold our first loaves and we started doing pop-ups and it just took off from there. So here we are at the farmer's market, end quote. She and her husband, Cesaro, are the owners of From Our Mesa, a sourdough micro-bakery based in Sioux City. The sellout came in just over 2 hours of opening for business. Quote, we didn't expect it to be that fast. We are pleasantly surprised. It has been nice, she said with a huge grin. Quote, we are very excited. It's amazing. There were only crumbs left in the wooden case the couple used to display their sourdough breads. Quote, I think a lot of people were looking for the sandwich loaves and the classic. My husband's favorite is the herb and cheese, and that one went pretty fast as well. We do have some regular customers that came, and they kind of already knew what they wanted, Mesa said. New market manager Melissa Gritzmaker said it was good to get the market season underway. Quote, it's great. You came just in time. The sun just popped out. The aisles are full. It has just been so great, Gritzmaker said. Quote, there's lots of people coming down. Everyone is excited to be back at the market and see everybody they missed from last year and see the new vendors. It's just a good day so far, end quote. Elise Brandt and her family were visiting the market for the first time on Saturday. Quote, we love being out and seeing everybody, seeing all the different small businesses, so we got a little sampling. We got the salsa, the sourdough bread, some popcorn, flowers. We do the sampling from all the different businesses, end quote. 35 vendors packed the space on Pearl Street, selling everything from spring greens, tomato plants, flowers, honey, and ready to enjoy food for every appetite. There was live music by a group called the Ragged Rooster. Patrons of all ages packed the aisles. Many brought their dogs along to the first day of the market. The Grove sisters from Sioux City were enjoying the day's festival atmosphere. Quote, we started coming to the farmer's market when I got a dog because I wanted to help with socialization and it has worked wonders. We just come every Saturday and enjoy all the fun vendors, said Marissa Grove. She owns two giant schnauzers named Mia and London. Quote, it is great for the dogs. We go to our favorite vendors and have a good time. Her sister Allie Grove likes to eat her way around the market. Quote, I'm really biased. I like to try all the different foods, Allie said. When asked for her favorite, she smiled and said, the corn stand over there, the Mexican street corn. The sisters make a weekly visit each Saturday. Quote, it is just a really welcoming environment, and they have all different kinds of things that people grow, Allie said. It's really cool to see people from all different kinds of backgrounds get together and have a good time. The market is open from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. each Saturday and Wednesday. It is located just west of the Tyson Event Center in downtown Sioux City at the corner of Triview Avenue and Pearl Street. All right, returning back to the front page of Sunday's paper, headline, Northwest Iowa Lawmakers Talk Successes. In a little more than 3 months, the 2024 session for the Iowa legislature addressed a wide array of issues. From January 8th through April 20th, the Iowa House and Iowa Senate voted on or passed bills pertaining to an overhaul of the state's area education agencies, income tax cuts, immigration, allowing school staff to carry guns, an extension of postpartum Medicaid, and more. With the session now wrapped, the Journal checked up on 6 Siouxland legislators to see how they voted on key issues and ask about what they saw as the biggest successes and disappointments of the term. First one, Jacob Bossman. Jacob Bossman is a Republican who resides in Sioux City and represents House District 14. He is a member of U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley's staff, and in his first term in the Iowa House, Bossman is up for re-election in November, running unopposed. Key votes. Area Education Agency overhaul, he voted yes. Income tax cut, yes. Illegal immigration enforcement, yes. Allowing school staff to carry guns, yes. And postpartum Medicaid extension, he voted yes. The bills he sponsored or worked on included Senate File 2442, which was income tax cuts, includes extra funding for targeted jobs program that passed. And then House File 2691, it was the Rebuild Iowa Infrastructure Fund budget, and that passed. Successes of the session. He said, quote, "The large balance in the taxpayer relief fund is proof that we are over-collecting from Iowa taxpayers. With prices rising and inflation soaring, Iowans need that money back. I am proud we are able to speed up the previously enacted tax cuts and to further lower individual rates to 3.8%. Disappointments from the session. Quote, "There is a shortage of affordable housing in Iowa. The market doesn't work when there isn't enough of a product in the price range needed. I introduced a number of bills to help address this issue and build on the programs we already fund through the state budget, from increasing the workforce housing tax credit to establishing land redevelopment trusts. Neither of these bills became law, but I will continue to work to build consensus on those issues." Next up, J.D. Scholten. J.D. Scholten is a Democrat who resides in Sioux City and represents House District 1. He is a freelance paralegal slash consultant and former minor league baseball player. He is serving his first term in the Iowa House. Scholten said last year he was disappointed in Republicans' private school funding bill. He is up for re-election, challenged by Republican Josh Steinhoff. Key votes. Area education overhaul, no. Income tax cut, no. Illegal immigration enforcement, did not vote. Allowing school staff to carry guns, no. And postpartum Medicaid extension, no. The bills he sponsored or worked on include House File 2549 that regulates the use of AI on state election materials that did not pass, and House File 2656 eliminates MLB blackouts in Iowa that did not pass. Successes of the session. Quote, "The biggest success of the session was the passing of SF-2204, the bill strengthening the ban of foreign entities buying Iowa farmland. Iowa is already the gold standard of this, and this bill will help with enforcement. As I mentioned on my floor speech, Iowa is also the gold standard of corporate ownership of farmland, and I hope we work to strengthen that too." Disappointments from the session. Quote, "Without a doubt, the biggest disappointment of the legislative session was what the governor and the Republicans did to dismantle the AEAs, the Area Education Agencies. The process was unnecessary and chaotic while being disrespectful to the professionals that work at the AEAs and ultimately will hurt kids with special education needs. Secondly, the Senate not taking the PBM bill was awful. I was so proud of the House passing HF-2401. Drake University has a study that shows that over 40% of independent pharmacies will close in the next 12 months if something is done. This bill was a lifeline to them." Next, Kevin Alons. Kevin Alons is a Republican who resides in Salix and represents Senate District 7. He is in his first term in the Iowa Senate. Alons is not up for re-election. Alons supported the passage of private school education savings accounts last year, calling them one of the biggest successes from that session. Read his thoughts about this year's session below. Key votes. Area education agency overhaul, yes. Income tax cut, yes. Illegal immigration enforcement, yes. Allowing school staff to carry guns, yes. Postpartum Medicaid extension, yes. The bills he sponsored or worked on include Senate File 2108 that establishes a gold-backed currency as an alternative to the U.S. dollar that did not pass. Senate File 2150 requires schools to show anti-abortion videos similar to Meet Baby Olivia in class that did not pass. Senate File 2272 changes consumer health data protection laws, and that did not pass. Successes of the session. Quote, increased teacher pay, school security infrastructure improvements, and facilitating schools arming staff if they deem appropriate and meet training requirements. Quote, Religious Freedom Restoration Act, or RFRA. This bill protects the free exercise of religion by Iowa citizens by ensuring that when a citizen believes their religious freedom is infringed, they have standing in court, and the court will evaluate it with strict scrutiny and use the least burdensome means of addressing if necessary. Quote, prioritize history and civics in K-12 education while directing the Department of Education to accomplish a thorough review of all curriculum standards to ensure that they are setting teachers and students up for success. Disappointments from the session. Quote, no legislative progress for the protection of landowners concerning the unconstitutional threat of eminent domain for carbon sequestration pipelines, i.e. private for-profit companies, not a public use project. Quote, HF 2617 did not advance to the Senate, and that's the fetal development, aka Baby Olivia bill. This bill adds a common sense scientific requirement to teach the basics of fetal development in the womb to include a 3-minute ultrasound and a 3-minute animation video. Quote, age verification for access to pornography sites did not pass. In parentheses, very young minors currently have completely unlimited access to this content. Jeff Taylor. Jeff Taylor is a Republican who resides in Sioux Center and represents Senate District 2. He is a political science professor and in his first term in the Iowa Senate. Taylor is up for re-election in November, running unopposed. Last year, Taylor sponsored several bills dealing with eminent domain authority for carbon dioxide pipelines. Read his thoughts on this year's session below. Key votes. Area Education Agency overhaul? Yes. Income tax cut did not vote. Illegal immigration enforcement? Yes. Allowing school staff to carry guns did not vote. Postpartum Medicaid extension, yes. The bills he sponsored or worked on include Senate File 252. That creates accommodations for students at Iowa's public universities who are pregnant or recently gave birth. That did not pass. Senate File 40, it creates a cold case investigative unit in the Department of Public Safety. That did not pass. The successes of the session. Quote, the biggest accomplishment this session was the passage of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, SF 2095. It's important because it reminds judges that where laws and regulations within the state contradict the right to freely exercise a religion, priority should usually be given to our God-given constitutionally protected rights. Disappointments from the session. A great deal of time and energy was devoted to reform of the area education agencies, but I was not convinced that the system as a whole was broken and needed to have greater centralization at the state level. I was disappointed that the medical conscience, ISF 2286, the fetal development, House File 2617, and landowner protection, House File 2664 bills were not brought to the Senate floor for a vote. And finally, Zach Deacon. Zachary Deacon is a Republican who resides in Granville and represents House District Number 5. He is an Iowa State Trooper and in his first term in the Iowa House. Deacon is up for re-election in November, running unopposed. Key votes. Area Education Agency overhaul, no. Income tax cut, did not vote. Illegal immigration enforcement, yes. Allowing school staff to carry guns, yes. Postpartum Medicaid extension, yes. The bills he sponsored or worked on are House File 2256, and that extends equal protection laws to an unborn child from the moment of conception. Successes of the session, quote, religious freedom, immigration bill, end quote. Disappointments from the session, quote, nothing done on abortion, more needs to be done to protect state sovereignty and push back against the federal government. Lynn Evans. Lynn Evans is a Republican who resides in Aurelia and represents Senate District Number 3. He is an educator and in his first term in the Iowa Senate. Evans said that this year he was happy to pass a bill reorganizing state government and property tax, or last year he was happy to pass a bill reorganizing state government and property tax cuts. He is not up for re-election in November. Key votes. Area Education Agency overhaul? Yes. Income tax cut? Yes. Illegal immigration enforcement? Yes. Allowing school staff to carry guns? Yes. Postpartum Medicaid extension? Yes. The bills he sponsored or worked on include House File 2422 that increases penalties for accessory to murder after the fact, that passed. House File 2602 creates a criminal offense of grooming, passed. House File 2586 creates a permitting process for school staff to carry guns on campus passed. House File 2612 overhauls the Area Education Agency's funding and oversight passed. Successes of the session. Income tax reform reducing the state income tax to a flat 3.8% will allow hardworking Iowans to keep more of their earnings in their pockets. Mental health reform that aligns mental health care with addiction services not only makes sense, but will provide for a more efficient delivery service across the state. Disappointments from the session. Quote, no action on providing all-day four-year-old preschool. This bill would have been especially beneficial for families of low socioeconomic status. This simple change would go a long way to addressing improved student achievement and early childhood literacy. No action taken on the use of eminent domain. House File 2664 had the potential to be beneficial for both the landowners and those requiring use of eminent domain by expediting the process. So that's just a wrap up of the most recent legislative session in the Iowa House and Senate. All right, let's kind of more on that same theme. Let's return to the front page where the headline is phrased as a question. As such, how did Reynolds' legislative agenda fare? Question mark. From the Journal Des Moines Bureau. Speaking to Iowa lawmakers at the beginning of this year's legislative session, Governor Kim Reynolds promised a, quote, bold vision for the state, raising teacher pay, overhauling area education agencies, cutting taxes, and reorganizing large healthcare and administrative systems. Reynolds, a Republican, proposed more than a dozen bills this year dealing with healthcare, education, economic growth, and the structure of government. Reynolds was able to usher in many of her proposals largely as written, with large Republican majorities in the House and Senate that are generally supportive of her policy agenda. Other bills, though, saw major changes in the lawmaking process, and some bills that lawmakers have rejected before failed to pass again. The cornerstone of Reynolds' agenda this year was a plan to reorganize the funding and function of the state's area education agencies, which provide special education support to school districts. The bill met significant resistance within her own party, as House Republicans initially tabled the bill in a subcommittee. A compromise eventually passed with significant changes, retaining the AEAs as the primary special education providers in the state. That law also set the starting salary for teachers at $50,000 by 2026, increasing starting pay for Iowa teachers from the bottom half in the nation to among the highest in the 50 states. Current starting salary for teachers is $33,500. Reynolds also proposed a major tax bill that would have set a flat income tax at 3.5% by next year. That bill saw significant changes as well. Leading Republican lawmakers settled on a plan that sets a 3.8% flat tax next year, which Reynolds signed into law last week. Other tax measures in Reynolds' bill, including changes to the unemployment tax employers pay and cutting property taxes for child care centers, did not make it into the final law. During a news conference on Wednesday, Reynolds said she felt good about the results of this year's session. She said her office was working on nearly 20 bills going into the legislative session, joking that it was, quote, way too many. Quote, we took on a lot, and I really feel good about where we landed, Reynolds said. I'm really proud of the fact that we passed the largest teacher salary increase in the history of the state. Democrats argued during the session this year that Reynolds' agenda was politically motivated and did not address the major needs of Iowans in areas like housing, healthcare, and wages. They took specific aim at the AEA changes, saying they served the corporate interests and would weaken special education in Iowa. House Minority Leader Jennifer Kornfrist, Democrat of Windsor Heights, noted as the session came to a close that Republican lawmakers did not come into the session with AEA reform as a major goal. Quote, the governor runs this building with Republicans. Her agenda, her politics always center stage, Confress said. Quote, I continue to remind my colleagues that we are a separate branch of government and that we don't work for the governor. But the Republican leadership and Republican legislators sure act like we do, end quote. House Speaker Pat Grassley signaled support for Reynolds' policy agenda as the session ended, but he noted lawmakers reviewed and made changes to some of her proposals. Quote, the governor laid out a very bold agenda when it came to things like the AEA issue, and we were able to work with all the interested parties, I think, really land in a really good place, Grassley said. Not every single priority that's laid out, but some of those really high-profile ones, we were able to advance the ball on those. Education has been front and center in Reynolds' legislative agendas in recent years, and last year she guided the passage of a private school Choice program that is expected to cost the state $179 million next year. This year, Reynolds' initial plan for the area education agencies would have eliminated their services outside special education support and diverted nearly all their funding to school districts. The districts would then have had the option to contract with the AEAs or an outside party for those services. After hearing from parents of students with disabilities and concerned educators, Republicans landed on a proposal that will require schools to spend 90% of their special education funding with the AEAs. Districts will eventually receive the full amount the AEAs now receive for media and education services, and they will have broad discretion over where and how to spend those dollars. Reynolds said previously the final law, which sat into March, was, quote, a phenomenal place to start towards restructuring special education delivery. The AEA redesign will, quote, really bring transparency, consistency, and accountability to the process, Reynolds said last week. For Democrats, Reynolds' education agenda has been a constant target of criticism, as they've argued recent policies have transferred large swaths of tax dollars from the public schools to unaccountable private institutions. Democrats pointed to the dozens of AEA staff who have either resigned or retired this year, citing the new law as a motivating reason. But imagine what will happen next year, Cornfrist said. Quote, so many unintended consequences here and will really continue to hurt our rural communities, especially in rural Iowa. When you've got small districts, the AEAs provide those services that can't otherwise be afforded because you've got one child who needs them. Reynolds said the AEA system is changing as a result of the law, but she noted it will be a slow transition as funding for media services, education services, and special education gradually change hands over the next 2 years. Some of the staff leaving the AEAs, she said, will likely be employed at the State Department of Education under the new Special Education Division that will oversee the agencies. Lawmakers transferred $10 million from the AEAs this year to the Education Department, which will in part support 62 new full-time employees for special education oversight. All right, friends. Well, that is all for the Sunday paper that's new in local content. So I will now be switching over to the Saturday, May 4th paper of the Sioux City Journal. All right. Front page of yesterday's paper on Saturday, headline, Fed sued to block immigration law. A top U.S. Department of Justice official says the federal government will sue to block a new Iowa immigration law criminalizing, quote, illegal reentry from being enforced. In a letter obtained by the Gazette and first reported by the Des Moines Register, Justice Department's Principal Deputy Assistant Attorney General Brian Boynton sent a letter Thursday to Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds and Iowa Attorney General Brenda Byrd stating the department, quote, intends to bring a lawsuit to enforce the supremacy of federal law and to enjoin Senate File 2340, which Reynolds signed into law last month, from taking effect. Quote, SF 2340 is preempted by federal law and violates the United States Constitution, Boynton wrote. The letter states the federal government intends to file suit unless Iowa agrees to refrain from enforcing the new state law. He gave the state a deadline of Tuesday. Reynolds has said Iowa needs to defend itself, attributing increases in fentanyl seizures, drug overdose deaths, and human trafficking to illegal immigration issues, and what she said has been a failure of Democratic President Joe Biden to secure the southern border. Quote, the only reason we had to pass this law is because the Biden administration refuses to enforce laws already on the books, Reynolds, a Republican, said in a statement. Quote, I have a duty to protect the citizens of Iowa. Unlike the federal government, we will respect the rule of law and enforce it. Biden has hit back at congressional Republicans for playing politics with the border and walking away from a bipartisan border security bill endorsed by the National Border Patrol Council. The deal was part of a $118 billion national security supplemental package that included aid for Ukraine, security assistance for Israel, and humanitarian assistance for civilians in Gaza, the West Bank, and Ukraine, and aid to the Indo-Pacific. It included $20.2 billion for improvements to U.S. border security. The proposal also would have overhauled the process for seeking asylum in the United States, raising the initial standard a person must pass to access the asylum system. It also would have expanded additional visas and future green card availability while also increasing detention capacity. Once illegal border crossings reach a certain threshold, the Department of Homeland Security would be required under the measure to exercise a new authority that bars migrants, except unaccompanied minors, from crossing between ports of entry. The U.S. House last month failed to pass a separate border security bill, Democrats argued that the bill was a rehash of a bill Republicans passed last year that would reinstate Trump-era immigration policies, such as construction of the border wall, and require asylum seekers to remain in Mexico. Byrd, also Republican, said in a statement that, quote, Iowa will not back down. Quote, not only has Biden refused to enforce federal immigration laws and secure our border, he's now threatening to block states like Iowa from enforcing our own laws, Byrd said. Quote, our message to Biden is that Iowa will not back down and stand by as our state safety hangs in the balance. If Biden refuses to stop the border invasion and keep our community safe, Iowa will do the job for him. Set to take effect July 1st, the new law makes it a state crime for someone to attempt to enter Iowa after being previously deported or barred from entering the United States. The law makes it an aggravated misdemeanor, which carries up to a two-year sentence. In some cases, including people with certain prior convictions, the state crime would become a felony, punishable by up to 5 to 10 years in prison. For those convicted under the new law, Iowa judges will be required to issue an order requiring the person to return to the country from which he or she entered the United States. The order must specify the manner in which the person would be transported to the U.S. port of entry. Undocumented immigrants could face felony charges for noncompliance. A similar law passed in Texas is temporarily blocked while a federal appeals court weighs a challenge to a lower court's ruling that struck down the measure. The lower court found that the law, quote, threatens the fundamental notion that the United States must regulate immigration with one voice. Boynton, in his letter to state officials, cited a 2012 U.S. Supreme Court decision that found Arizona's state immigration provisions conflicted in part with federal immigration laws. The court said the federal government has broad, undoubted power over the subject of immigration and the status of non-citizens. Iowa's law effectively creates a separate state immigration scheme by imposing state-level criminal penalties for violating federal laws barring unlawful reentry into the United States, he wrote. SF 2340 also conflicts with federal law permitting undocumented immigrants to seek protection while seeking asylum or humanitarian parole to avoid persecution or torture in their home country, the letter states. Members of Iowa's Latino community, immigrant workers, advocates, and allies marched and held vigils earlier this week in Iowa City, Davenport, Waterloo, and Des Moines to protest the new state law. Immigrant rights advocates warn the new Iowa law will lead to widespread racial profiling and stereotyping and consume already strapped state court and law enforcement resources. Some law enforcement officials in the state have said they lack the tools and resources at their disposal to enforce the law. Opponents also raise concerns that parents may be separated from their children if arrested under the new state crime. All right, headline. Quote, another chance at life. Sioux City wildlife rehabbers aid injured critters. From Sioux City. For most people, a group of baby squirrels taking up residence inside their house would prompt a call to animal control. Like a handful of other area animal lovers, Stephanie Eckner welcomes the little furry critters into her Sioux City home. She accepted 5 orphan squirrels about 3 weeks ago, at first feeding them milk. Now it's a mix of squirrel feed and treats, watching them grow until they're old enough to be released back into the wild. Quote, I just like the satisfaction of helping the animals. It's a lot of fun releasing them. You gave them another chance at life. Eukner, a wildlife rehabilitator for 3 years. It's a volunteer job that can take up as much time as a full-time job. Eckner, a licensed rehabber who's also caring for an injured pigeon, works both a full-time and part-time job, squeezing feedings of whatever animal she happens to be caring for at the time into her already busy schedule with the help of her husband, Tyler. Quote, it's a big commitment, Amanda Hasse, director of the nonprofit Forever Wildlife Lodging Clinic, a network of wildlife rehabbers to which Eukner belongs. Taking in sick, injured, and orphaned wild animals can amount to a full-time job on top of whatever career one might have, Hazi said, especially at this time of year, when everyone, it seems, is finding baby squirrels, bunnies, and other animals in their yards and calling her to save them. Quote, people call all hours of the day. We don't get a lot of sleep during baby season, said Hazi, who receives 50 to 100 calls a day from April through June, the majority of them pertaining to baby animals. Responding to those calls and arranging for someone to take in the animals equates to a second full-time job on top of her regular job. The nights of waking up every 2 hours to feed a litter of baby coyotes or an injured fox are worth it. But it's a lot of sleepless nights. It's tears. It's frustrating. It's a lot of work, Hazi said. I absolutely love what I do, or I wouldn't do it. It's very rewarding. Like other rehabbers, Hazi and Eckner have a soft spot in their heart for animals. Eckner's parents rescued wild animals, an example that helped lead her into animal rescue. Hazi was recruited by another rehabber and had previously done pet rescue. That was around 2012, long before her garage became a sanctuary for rehabbing animals, and she became a mentor to apprentice rehabbers, helping them earn their wildlife rehabilitation licenses from the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. It's illegal to possess a wild animal in Iowa, so rehabbers must be licensed to take in wildlife. The DNR does not rehabilitate animals, so those licensed rehabbers are valuable resources for DNR officers who often get called about injured or abandoned animals. Quote, they're alleviating a lot of the calls that might come directly to us. A lot of the time, I don't even get the calls anymore, DNR conservation officer Stacy Bragg said. Quote, for these people, especially volunteers that have been around for decades, it's amazing. There's a huge amount of passion. Passion and expense. Hazi is constantly fundraising to support Forever Wildlife, which last year spent $15,000 just on formula for baby animals. Other expenses include veterinary expenses, medicine, supplies, and transportation costs to drive injured animals such as eagles to specialized rehabilitation organizations. With 2,200 animals taken in and cared for during 2023, fundraising didn't cover it all. But we all spend our own money doing this, Hazi said. It's worth it, though. Hazi loves the challenges of helping an injured animal heal, even if it means sleepless nights and out-of-pocket expenses. The payoff is watching a bald eagle whose wing was broken once again take flight, or seeing a fox whose leg was shattered again, full health, and return to the wild. But there's something seeing that animal go back in the world knowing that you made a difference, Hazi said. Rehabbers know that not every animal they take in will survive, but for dozens of animals every year, those rehabbers are the difference between life and death. The busiest time of year, so what to do if you find an injured animal or abandoned animal? The busiest time of year for wild animal rehabbers is April through June when animals are raising their young. Mandy Hazi, director of the nonprofit Forever Wildlife Lodge and Clinic, said her phone is flooded with people calling about babies they say were abandoned. In most cases, the animals haven't been abandoned. Rather, the mother is away getting food for herself or her young children, teaching them how to stay safe on their own. Quote, mom almost always comes back. Leave them alone, Hazi said. If you uncover baby rabbits or other wildlife, leave them and check back 24 hours later to see if they're still there. In most cases, the mother will have returned and moved on with them. If the babies are still there, call an animal rehabber and ask for advice before doing anything. Picking up and feeding baby animals without knowing their dietary needs can sometimes do more harm than good, Hazi said. Deer should always be left alone, Hazi said, because it's illegal to rehabilitate them. Again, fawns found alone are rarely abandoned. The mother is away and knows exactly where her young are. Anyone who finds injured or abandoned animals can visit the Iowa Department of Natural Resources website at iowadnr.gov and search for a list of licensed animal rehabilitators in our area. Hazi advised that rehabbers are all volunteers, so they might not be able to answer the phone or return a message immediately. Information is also available on the Forever Wildlife Facebook page. All right, let's return back to the front page to where we get an update on the missing and now found deceased Iowa trucker from our area. Headline, Second Schultz Autopsy to Proceed, from Wall Lake, Iowa. The second autopsy of Wall Lake trucker David Schultz will proceed even after his funeral services next week, a spokesman for the Schultz family told the Journal this week. David Schultz, 53, was found dead April 24th in a field in rural Sac County, not far from where his semi-truck was found abandoned more than 5 months earlier. Preliminary autopsy results released the following day indicated, quote, no signs of trauma or serious injury, and authorities do not suspect foul play. Final results of the autopsy conducted by the Iowa Office of the State Medical Examiner are expected to take several weeks. It is unclear if the findings will be made public. Jake Rowley, a leader in the volunteer search for Schultz, who has since become a spokesman for the family, quickly countered that the family would seek out a, quote, second opinion autopsy and said, quote, I don't feel comfortable with the results of the initial autopsy. Meanwhile, Schultz's funeral was scheduled for May 10th in Wall Lake. Rowley told the Journal by phone Thursday that the funeral will proceed as scheduled and that the body will not be needed for the second autopsy. Schultz's remains were released to his widow, Sarah, last week, Rowley said. Quote, at this point, David's body is at the funeral home and it's in a freezer until we get to the point where we can do this burial next week, he said. Quote, originally I thought they would need the remains to do the second autopsy, Rowley said, but in his conversation with forensic pathologists, he said he learned that the second autopsy would be based on the examination, measurements, and findings of the first autopsy. The remains will be buried. Riley said a forensic pathologist has not been selected for the second autopsy, which cannot proceed until the first is complete. The choice of a forensic pathologist will be based on whichever one's willing to do it pro bono, and that one pathologist told him a second autopsy will be, quote, way more expensive than you think it is. Riley said he's grown wary of the chorus of voices on social media that have descended on the case, offering scores of theories. Quote, there's even been people accusing me of killing David, Riley said, noting that he did not get involved until the third day and after the disappearance. Quote, I'm like, come on, dude. All I did was come out and search for him. It's just nuts. They've got a whole Facebook group that's literally the most toxic thing anybody's ever seen. Social media followers of the case recently began questioning where exactly Schultz's body was found and how close it was to his abandoned truck. The Iowa Department of Public Safety said that Schultz was found in the vicinity of 190th Street and Union Avenue, which is near where the truck was found, but the exact location hasn't been revealed. Quote, I know the specific location, but I haven't been authorized yet to release that, Riley said. Quote, so until law enforcement would tell me that I'm okay to talk about that, I can't necessarily say exactly where. I do know exactly to the pinpoint where it was at, but I've been pretty vague up to this point just because I can't tell law enforcement or somebody would give me the authorization to be able to release that. Or unless law enforcement released it themselves, that's when I'd be able to say, okay, here it is. Schultz's body was discovered by an individual who reported he discovered a body in his field, according to the initial press release of the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation. As of March, the reward fund of $20,400 has been established to help locate Schultz. This fund included $25,000 of the American Rescue Plan funds that Sac County voted to earmark for the case. Sac County Attorney Ben Smith told the Journal that no one has inquired about the reward. Quote, that's not an issue that's come up, he said. Smith declined to comment on whether anyone is eligible for the reward. All right, let's now turn to the local section, page A4 of today's paper. Or excuse me, yesterday's paper. Headline, community members participate in Are You Smarter Than a Fourth Grader fundraiser. Are you smarter than a fourth grader? It turns out that Steve DeVoe actually was, since the COO of CNOS was the big winner of Are You Smarter Than a Fourth Grader fundraiser for the Sioux City Public Schools Foundation held Thursday night at West High School. Based on the TV quiz show Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader, the benefit had adult community members match wits with a panel of Sioux City Community School District fourth graders in three increasingly difficult rounds, hosted by Sioux City Journal editor Bruce Miller and Siouxland Chamber of Commerce Investment Relations Director Heidi Renneking. Answering questions while contributing to a, quote, jar of destiny to the Sioux City Public Foundation, DeVoe won out over both Larry Moser of Gallagher Insurance and Larry Wentz of KTIV-TV, who each won a round apiece. The other contestants were Amy Denny of Sioux City Community Schools, Brian Crichton of CMBA Architects, and Katie Krause of Together for a Greater Good, TAGG. Fourth graders were Addison Timblin, Liberty Elementary School, Lucas Ortega, Bryant Elementary School, Colin Conaway, Perry Creek Elementary School, Connor Koch, Leeds Elementary School, William Bush, Spalding Park Environmental Sciences Elementary School, Ava Sissel, Les Hills Computer Programming Elementary School, and Lola Holenkamp, Sunnyside Elementary School, Emmanuel Tadis, Morningside STEM Elementary School, and Kenny Franco, Hunt A-Plus Arts Elementary School, and Jordan Ramirez, Irving Dual Language Elementary School. The mission of the Sioux City Public Schools Foundation is to support the Sioux City Community School District with innovative programs that cannot be achieved through limited state and federal fundraising. Its purpose is to effectively utilize available resources to provide students with the maximum opportunity for both academic and lifelong success. All right, let's turn to the brief section of page A4. Headline, Hinton woman boarded freight train rather than drive home drunk, from Orange City, Iowa. A Hinton, Iowa woman was arrested for trespassing late Thursday after hopping a train in Sioux City because she didn't want to drive home while intoxicated. According to a Sioux County Sheriff's news release, Shannon Heckler called 911 and told the dispatcher that she was on a northbound train and wanted to get off. She told dispatcher she was intoxicated and thought it was safer to get on the train than drive home. Authorities contacted Burlington Northern Santa Fe, or BNSF Railway, which alerted the train's crew to stop the train. The train stopped near Sioux Center, Iowa, and a sheriff's deputy located Heckler walking on the railroad tracks near the intersection of 370th Street and U.S. Highway 75.
According to a complaint filed in Sioux County District Court, Heckler's speech was slurred, she smelled of alcohol, and had trouble maintaining her balance and told the deputy she had been drinking too much. A preliminary breath test registered at 0.191% alcohol content, more than twice the legal limit of 0.08. Heckler, 46, was arrested for public intoxication, and BNSF asked that she be charged with trespassing. In a post on X, formerly Twitter, the Sioux County Sheriff's Office reminded people to call a friend, Uber, or find another way to get home rather than drive drunk. Quote, "While we appreciate not driving a vehicle after drinking too much alcohol, and we are certainly glad no one was injured, we suggest not climbing aboard a moving BNSF railway freight train to get you home. All kidding and fun aside, please don't drink and drive," the post read. Headline, weight restriction in place on West Street Bridge after inspection. A 3-ton weight restriction has gone into effect in the West Street Bridge to ensure the public safety. Civil engineer Katie Eckhock told the Journal an inspection revealed some repairs to the bridge were needed. She said the weight restrictions will be lifted after the repairs are completed, but she doesn't know when that will be. Motorists are encouraged to use the following detour until further notice: Stone Park Boulevard, Hamilton Boulevard, Southridge Road, and 320th Street. All right, next headline. Northwestern College Theater student finishes in second. From Orange City, Iowa, Northwestern College's storied theater department recently claimed another award. Jack McGregor, a student from Denison, Iowa, placed second nationally for scenic design at the Kennedy Center American College Theater Festival in Washington, D.C., because of his work on a production of Silent Sky, a drama about astronomer Henrietta Leavitt. Quote, "Overall, the show turned out beautifully. I love the design process, seeing it come to fruition, and experiencing how it helped tell the story of Silent Sky," he said. A release from the school noted that McGregor won runner-up honors while competing with graduate theater students, getting their Master's of Fine Arts degrees in scenic design. He also won a full summer fellowship to work as a scenic designer for the Eugene O'Neill Theater Center in Waterford, Connecticut, which is described as the launchpad of American theater. Northwestern College Theater Department Chair Robert Hubbard said McGregor does his own research that integrates seamlessly into the ensemble. McGregor recently told the Journal that scenic design is something he picked up in high school. Quote, "I liked working with my hands," he explained. "Building and painting a set was as much of a creative challenge as anything else in theater." So congratulations to that young man. Well, while we're talking about Northwestern and arts, let's continue on page A5, the A and E section, which I assume is arts and entertainment. Headline, Northwestern to offer summer art workshops and camps. From Orange City, Iowa, Northwestern College's art department has scheduled summer workshops and camps for young people interested in learning how to paint or developing their artistic talent. Faith Tyrell, the department's community outreach coordinator and a 2023 Northwestern art/graphic design graduate, will teach 3 1-session classes and 2 4-session camps in June and July, Northwestern said in a press release. For each event, all supplies are provided and paint clothes are recommended. Quote, "Want to paint like Bob? Will guide participants in painting a nature scene in the style of the 1980s TV icon Bob Ross. A 2-hour daytime session starting at 10 a.m. either Tuesday, June 25th or Thursday, July 25th is geared for 6th graders through adults, while Thursday, July 11th at 7 p.m. is designed as a date night activity for adults, according to the press release. The cost is $40 per person or $60 per couple. Quote, "Wild Watercolors for students in 5th through 8th grade is a 4-session camp scheduled June 18th through the 21st from 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. Tyrell will demonstrate how to mix colors and the difference between wet and dry brushing. Participants will also learn how to use salt, masking tape, and watercolor stencils in their work. The final day will provide an opportunity for the campers to show their parents their paintings and to teach them some of the techniques they learned. The cost is $80 per person. Finally, Amazing Acrylics is a 4-session camp that students in 7th through 12th grade. It will take place from 6 to 7:30 p.m. on Tuesdays, July 9th, 16th, 23rd, and 30th, according to the press release. All right, let's continue our local and state news coverage from page A6. Headline, trespassers suspected of causing fire. Trespassers are expected to set a fire that damaged the deserted Agronaut apartment building at the corner of Nebraska and 11th Streets Wednesday evening. Sioux City Fire Rescue Deputy Fire Marshal Joe Rodriguez told the Journal that crews were called to the red tag building at around 7:36 p.m. Wednesday.
But once our crews got there, they encountered heavy amounts of smoke coming from the building, Rodriguez said. Quote, there was a working fire on the north side of the building, kind of towards the basement area. A search found no one inside the building, Rodriguez said. The building suffered severe smoke and fire damage, he added. The fire is believed to have been caused by trespassers, though it is unclear if the fire was accidental in nature. Quote, obviously there's no electricity, there's no gas to the building, so a fire doesn't just start by itself, Rodriguez said, adding that the fire was caused by somebody. An investigation into the fire and possible culprit is ongoing. Anyone with information on the fire is encouraged to notify the Sioux City Police Department. The century-old Agronaut has been vacant for more than a year. Last March, the city of Sioux City declared the building unfit for occupancy due to a heating boiler that had been out of order for several months and its residents had to leave. Sioux City Code Enforcement Manager Daryl Bullock said a demolition order was placed on the building on April 18th. The order requires the owner of the property to demolish it. If they failed to do so, the city would take charge of the demolition and assess the costs against the property. No date has been set for the demolition, which Bullock noted is a, quote, long, long process. Much is wrong with the building, he said. Quote, there's a tremendous amount of repairs that need to be made there. I'm not even sure if it's possible at this point, Bullock said. Quote, it's been so destroyed, end quote. All right, let's go back to the legislative side of things. Headline, Reynolds signs ban on guaranteed income. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds signed a bill into law on Wednesday that bans local governments from participating in guaranteed income programs like the Uplift program in central Iowa. It was one of more than three dozen bills Reynolds, a Republican, signed into law on Wednesday, 11 days after the end of the 2024 legislative session. Republican lawmakers passed the bill this year, arguing programs that provide unrestricted cash payments would discourage people from working and hurt the state's labor force. The law bans cities and counties from putting money towards a program that provides regular cash payments to individuals that are, quote, unearned and may be used for any purpose. There's one such program in the state, Uplift Iowa, a pilot program that involves four central Iowa local governments and a coalition of businesses and nonprofits. It is organized by the Harkin Institute at Drake University. The goal of the program is to study the effects of a guaranteed monthly income on the health and well-being of low-income people. The program is set to last 2 years until spring 2026. The new law takes effect immediately, but allows the Uplift Iowa program to continue. There are about 30 other similar programs operating across the United States, according to the Guaranteed Income Pilots Dashboard. The bill's sponsor, Representative Stephen Holt of Denison, called the program, quote, socialism on steroids during the legislative session. Quote, this is a redistribution of wealth. This is an attack on American values, he said in January. Democrats argued the bill, House File 2319, will take away local control and put more barriers in the way of low-income Iowans. Quote, this bill is nothing but a roadblock, said Representative Beth Wessel Cosherell, Democrat of Ames, during the floor debate on the bill. Quote, it removes local control and is one more attempt to ensure that struggling Iowans continue to struggle. Another bill Reynolds signed on Wednesday increases the monthly retirement payment for retired sheriffs and deputies out of the Iowa Public Employees Retirement System. The law, House File 2661, also creates a tax credit for police officers who move into the state to start a job as a police officer. New residents could receive up to $2,000 for moving expenses. The law also makes people charged with the murder of a police officer ineligible for cash bail in Iowa. A person who has pleaded guilty to assault on a police officer will also be ineligible for bail. Reynolds also signed into law a bill that creates the crime of grooming in the state. The law, House File 2602, creates a new criminal offense in state code. A person who uses written communication to seduce, solicit, lure, or entice a child or a person believed to be a child to engage in an unlawful sex act will be guilty of grooming. The offense is a Class D felony, which is punishable by up to 5 years in prison. Reynolds signed a bill on Wednesday to allow county attorneys to be issued permits to carry firearms. The law, House File 2570, adds county attorneys and assistant county attorneys to the list of occupations who may be issued professional permits to carry weapons. Supporters of the bill this year argue that the county attorneys have been assaulted and put in dangerous situations that warrant the heightened protections. Adult entertainment establishments that present a public safety could be shut down by city officials under a bill Reynolds signed on Wednesday. The law, House File 2531, was supported by Davenport city officials after several safety incidents at strip clubs in the city. Once the law takes effect, cities and counties will be able to ask a court to limit the hours of adult establishments if there's evidence that any of the following took place in or near the premises. 1, a person fired a gun. 2, a person assaulted another person with a dangerous weapon resulting in an injury, or a riot took place at least 3 times. All right, let's do letters to the editor. I'd like to read Siouxland Voices. Here we have 2 letters today, or yesterday, excuse me. Headline, leave protesting Palestine students alone. Israeli troops have killed over 34,000 in Gaza, the majority women and children. In Jonah Goldberg's recent opinion piece, he has the audacity to judge the motivation of college students who have been protesting the actions of the State of Israel and the complicity of the United States in such devastation. Oddly, he puts much of the blame on the, quote, progressive boomer generation who, he says, believe protest is, quote, self-justifying and the rite of passage of enlightened youth. As a member of that progressive boomer generation, I am familiar with many others in that generation and have yet to meet one who shares such a view. Rather, many of us condemn both Hamas and the Israel actions. Neither Goldberg nor I have any standing from which to generalize or minimize the students who are protesting. Rather, we both support the First Amendment, and we do well to honor their right in standing up for what they believe. To imply their actions are, quote, performative cosplay or, quote, mass tantrums serves only to trivialize their commitment. I don't know what generation to which Goldberg belongs. He says, quote, as a generation, progressive baby boomers take a backseat to nobody in their stunning self-regard and overestimation of their historical importance. Ouch. Please, Mr. Goldberg, keep putting my generation down and leave the students alone. Signed, Greg Nooney, Sioux City. The next letter is titled, Fine Arts Program Offers Students Lifelong Skills. And the letter writer writes, would the Sioux City School Board consider and answer the following question. Are you still able to physically play competitive football? How about competitive basketball, soccer, and compete in track events? I am in my 80s and I can still sing, play an instrument, read, enjoy art, enjoy reading about science and history, balance the checkbook, type on the computer, and cook, sew, and many more skills I learned at Central High School. Why are you thinking of cutting lifelong skills such as singing when you finance other activities that students can participate in for such a short time? Just wondering, question mark. Signed, Glendy Nichols of Sioux City. All right, friends, that brings us to a close with our time together. So I will be just giving a quick recap again of our weather as we are now very well firmly into spring. Again, today will be times of clouds and sun. It looks like no rain. So winds south-southeast, 7 to 14 miles per hour and a high of 69. Tonight will be turning cloudy, winds 7 to 14 miles per hour, low 51. Again, no rain. That'll change tomorrow, though. Strong afternoon thunderstorms. Winds from the south-southeast, 12 to 25 miles per hour, high of 71, and a low of 47. Tuesday, mostly sunny and beautiful. Winds west-northwest, 6 to 12 miles per hour, high of 75, low of 44. Wednesday, partly sunny and pleasant. Winds northwest, 3 to 6 miles per hour, high of 67, low of 47. Thursday, cooler with a few showers. Winds north 8 to 60 miles per hour, high of 61 and a low of 44. Well, that brings us to the end of Iris for Saturday, May 4th and Sunday, May 5th, 2024. So I hope you all have a wonderful week. Take care of yourselves and if you can, someone else. Have a good day.